We do have Exodus 2 open in front of you as we look at these words. And one of the things that we'll be doing again as a family for the first time after the pandemic time is running camp again this year down in Nevin. And so over the last few weeks, we've been planning for camp. Been thinking about all the things that need to be put in place, the positions that need to be filled to make sure that we can run the camp for the teenagers that will be joining us. And one of the big things that happens around this time of year is we put that kind of hour-to-hour plan in for the week, making sure that we know what's due to happen, whether it happens that way or not. The speaker will be asked what he'll speak on. He'll send us his quiet time notes. The head chef's putting together the food lists. He's making sure that the shoppings are all put in place, costing out everything, and making sure that we can feed the young people as they come to join us. And many other people have begun to plan their weeks as well. Now, planning is integral for camp. For different camps, it means different things. Ours is a 14 to 16-year-old camp, so we run generally on how they cope. But the 9 to 10-year-old camp, it needs a lot of planning, a lot of organization. And proper preparation makes sure that things have the best chance of going well. We prepare the leaders for what is required of them, the site to make sure that the tents are all up in the right places, to make sure that we've got enough places for the young people to sleep. And the evening meetings are planned so that we can share Christ with them. Now, preparation isn't just something we do now, though. It's something seen throughout the Bible. It's something we see the Lord doing. We see the preparation of Abraham through the trials that he went through. We see Jesus preparing himself and his disciples as he heads to the cross in the gospel. And the church be prepared through the letters in the second half of the New Testament. And this evening, as we look at this passage, we see the Lord preparing Moses for what will come in his life. And so this evening, as we explore this passage, we're going to be thinking about how God prepares the way. How God prepares the way. Now, we often prepare for things we know are coming, don't we? We prepare for our death by writing a will, making sure that we hope things will happen in the way that we want them to when we pass on, making sure we know what will happen with our children, our property, our pets. We prepare by thinking about the things we'd like to happen. When it comes to famous people, very famous people, there are big preparations that go into what will happen for their eventual death. One of the more famous preparations that have been put in place is for that of the Queen. There's something called Operation London Bridge that was leaked a couple of years ago, and it speaks of what will happen when the Queen dies. It's a preparation that's been in place since the 60s. It will trigger a cascade of different events that will happen, phone calls that need to be made to make sure that everything happens as it should when the Queen dies. And as we look at this passage this evening, we see preparation unlike those that we know in the world. God knows his plans. And we see that throughout the Bible. And as we look at Moses' life here, we see God's plans being prepared for in all that happens to him. The first way in which we see God preparing the way this evening is in verses 11 to 15. For God prepares the way with a change of scenery. Sometimes in life we need a change of scenery, don't we? Whether it be to recharge before going back into work or just to help us grow as a person. One of the more extreme examples of changes can be for those people going into rehab, those who are addicts. They know that where they are in their lives is not where they should be. They need to step out of that and to change where they are, to have a different environment. At the end of my first year of university, I found myself in a terrible place. The best thing I could do at that moment was step out of the situation I had put myself in. To move from the job, the friends, the social life that I was in, and take some time away. And once I'd done that, I found myself back in church. I found myself finding it easier to focus on the right things that I should be doing, the things I had gone to university for. And in time, I became a healthier person. A change of scenery can help us grow. Moses has been in a palace for his life. He's been surrounded by the oppressors of the Hebrew nation. He's known the teaching of Egypt, the culture of royalty, the expectations that were placed upon him. But God's plans for him and the preparations that were being made had to take Moses out of that situation, had to take him out of Egypt and into a fresh environment where God would shape him into the man he needed him to become. As we open, we see Moses grown up now, going out and watching what was happening in Egypt around him. Acts 7 verse 23 says this happened when Moses was about 40 years old. Up until then, he had been trained, he had been groomed, he was ready to become a leader within Egypt, according to Josephus, who tells us that. And all the while, he knew something of his true origin. He knew something of the people that he had come from, maybe from the stories of being found in the water. This boy who had started life raised by a Hebrew, now in his later life, looked out over them as some kind of ruler. He saw the work and no doubt knew the oppression they faced. Hebrews 11, verses 24 to 26 tells us some of what happened in the heart and mind of Moses here. As he looked at their burdens, it says that by faith, Moses deliberately decided to identify with the people of Israel rather than his Egyptian prestige and opportunity. By faith, it says, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ's greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. He knew who he was. Even in the life he had had, even in the royalty that he felt, he knew where he had come from. And he looked out at these people and he felt pity. He sees the Egyptian beating the Hebrew, one of his own people, it says, and he knows that he acts to act. If we wondered where his heart was, where his mind was at this moment in time, we need only look here at how he identifies himself with them. And in this moment, he acts in a way that will change his whole life. Looking this way and that, seeing no one, he kills the Egyptian. And he hides him in the sand. In this moment, we see these are the actions of a man about to do wrong. He looks either way. Regardless of the reason for what he is about to do, he knows that it's wrong. He looks either way. He tries to hide the body. He knows there's an issue with what is happening here. The Bible itself explains some of Moses' thinking behind this in Acts 7. It explains that Moses did this to defend and avenge the beaten Israelites, but also with the expectation that his fellow Israelites would recognize him as their deliverer. Acts 7, 23 to 25 says, "Now when he was 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended and avenged him who was oppressed and struck down the Egyptian, for he supposed that his brethren would have understood that God would deliver them by his hand. But they did not understand." Just like Jesus, Moses could not deliver when he lived in the palace of glory. He had to come down from his throne. He had to step away from the palace into a humble place before he could deliver his people. And Moses, in this moment, has to step away from royalty, has to humble himself. He had to leave all he knew and indirectly follow God's plans for what was about to happen here. And in that, we see this change of scenery in his life. But having done these things, he goes back to his life, it seems, in the palace and lives as he had before. But as the story continues, we see the response of the Jewish people, don't we? The next day he goes out and sees two Hebrews fighting and tries to intervene again. Moses had reason to believe that his education, his royal background, his success, and great sympathy for the people of Israel would have given him credibility in this moment. He had tried to intervene here in this violent dispute between two Hebrew men, but their response to him is that of challenging him. Who made you ruler and judge over us? He hoped that coming down from his throne, he would be welcomed by the people, but instead they turn on him. He's met with scorn. Moses seemed to act like a prince given his royal background. He acted like a judge in that he determined that one of these men did wrong. He seemed to be the perfect prince and judge for Israel, but they don't want him. In rejecting Moses, they say to him, "We don't want you to rule over us or tell us what to do." And what does that make us think of? The way the world responds to Christ. We don't want you in our lives. And in these moments, we see similarities between Moses and Christ, don't we? Both Moses and Jesus were favored by God from birth, miraculously preserved in childhood, mighty in word and deed, offered deliverance to Israel, rejected with spite and rejected in their right to be prince and judge. Their rejection of Moses causes great fear, though, for him. For he knows the situation he's put himself in. He knows that now he'll end up alone. We see at the end of verse 14 where they challenge him and tell him that everybody knows what has been happening. Moses had his plans, and to him they made sense. But God's plans were radically different. Moses thought that this work he had done through protecting one of the Israelites would curry him favor. But now he saw that he was alone. His plans hadn't worked in the way that he wanted them to. And the reason for that? Well, God had bigger plans. God had different plans for Moses. Before he could be used in the way God wanted to use him, there would have to be big changes. These plans would include Moses having to leave the land that he had surrounded himself. And we see that in verse 15, don't we? For God would use these moments to prepare Moses. But possibly as he ran, he may have worried that any plan God had for him had gone out the window. Maybe he thought his plans were the only way. And now as he has to run from Pharaoh ready to kill him, maybe he feels like all is lost. And even in the place Moses runs to, we see God's plan. At the end it says he goes to Midian. He sits down by this well. He doesn't escape to Canaan or Syria. Why? Well, historically there were extradition treaties there. And so he goes to Midian. Because God has a plan for who he'll meet. God has a plan for the situation that will happen. God has a plan to bring him to Reuel and his family. Moses was a royal man. He had lived in a palace for a long time. And now, and while living there, he had been taught their ways. He knew the Egyptian gods. He knew their customs. He knew their belief structures. But it wasn't the things that he needed to know. He needed to know God. He needed to know the people he had been born into and how this should impact him. And we've looked at this passage. We see a great sin in the life of Moses as he takes another man's life. But God would use that terrible situation for something far greater. Now Moses runs. He leaves everything he has, everything he's known, and he ends up in Midian meeting this family, as we'll see, and being drastically changed in light of it. God's plans begin with a change of scenery for you and me as well. When we live in the world, we live surrounded by the things of the world. But when we come to God, we have to change the scenery. Whether that be from the situations we put ourselves in, changing the friends that we have, or getting to know people with similar belief structures to ourselves, or simply just focusing our eyes on the Lord fully. We need a change of scenery in life. And God's way brings about that change for us. It will continue to affect us. Part of that change can be seen in our second point this evening. As we see, we are called to see God's plan with a change in company. With a change in company. When silver is mined from the ground, it's commonly mixed with a number of other elements. And in order to get pure silver that can be commercially and industrially used, it needs to be refined. The thing is about silver, it has an extraordinarily high melting point. It needs to be heated to about 2,200 degrees in order to be refined to complete purity. Only when it's been through that process does the silver become useful for its function. Beautiful service pieces, high-tech equipment, collectible coins all become possible through this refining. Without that process, it's largely worthless. Moses has been surrounded by people of the world. He's been in the royal house, which means he's been surrounded by Pharaoh and his yes men, and many other people that would have looked down upon the Israelites in that time. He needed a change, not just of scenery, but of company, of the people around him. And God would use this time away from Egypt to refine this man, to surround him by a priestly family. And in time, this would change Moses into the man that would go on to lead the Hebrews out of Egypt. For as we see in verse 16, a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water. And we'll see this meeting happen here. Finally, coming to Midian, Moses met with the daughters of this priest, likely a descendant of one of Abraham's other children through maybe Keturah, or named Midian in Genesis 25. And because of this connection with Abraham, we have good reason to believe that this is a true priest, a priest who worships the true God. God led Moses to this point, at this time, to change who he was. God was going to work through this company to prepare the way for what was still to come. These daughters, they worked in the fields and looked after the sheep. And due to this, God creates this meeting point here. But they came here face to face with opposition, don't they? We look as verse 17, we see the shepherds coming and trying to drive them away from the area. But Moses, once again, placed in the right time and the right place, intervenes, stands up for these women. In Egypt, Moses enjoyed life as one of the royal family. He was waited on hand and foot, but in the distant desert of Midian, Moses becomes a servant. He does a job here. He has an opportunity to help. He rescues these women. He waters them and the flock. He serves unlike he had ever done before. Now the girls return to their father, and he asks them, why are you back so early? Obviously, this was not a strange thing that these women would suffer hardships out in the field, because as they arrive home early, it shocks their father. Something has happened. Something has changed in their lives. And they're able to say, an Egyptian has saved us, has served us, has watered us in the flock. And from these words, we see Moses working to save and serve these women, not only rescuing them, but helping them. He serves this family. And now the father wants to return the favor. For he says, where is he? Why did you leave him? Bring him here. God causes Reuel to want to invite Moses in, and by doing so, encourages this change of company. Look how huge this change was. From royal household, surrounded by royalty, to humble priestly shepherds' homes in Midian. What a change is happening here. God had a great plan for Moses. He's going to use him as a savior for the people. And part of this plan was for him to be influenced by a priestly family, to have a different company around himself. Moses needs a change in his life. When I think of this story, the first thing that comes to my head is the kids' film, The Prince of Egypt, because my children love to watch it. And in that film, you see Moses' life portrayed as this prince surrounded by magicians and teachers and royals of the land, one where he continues to have the myth of Ra, the sun god, Anubis, the god of the dead, Khonsu, the god of the sun, just to name a few, pushed upon him. The culture that surrounded him had no place before God. The true God, the one above all things. It was no place for the Hebrew people to be suffering under this. And God's going to change this, going to bring freedom through this change of company. And so in God's great plan, he takes Moses out of that situation. He moves him into one where he'll be influenced by people who look to God. To a situation where he'll be given a chance to grow and mature in ways outside of Egypt. Give him time to be prepared for what is still to come. God has great plans for all his people. And at times that means we'll be taken out of situations. We'll be taken out of certain friendship groups at times. We'll be placed into new ones. God uses his people to bring others to new understandings of him. He uses his church as company to bring people to him, to point people to him. And as we come together each week in our churches, we look for this change of company. We look to point each other to God. Just as this change was good for Moses, and eventually the people of Israel as a whole, it is too good for us. And as we continue, as we look at verses 21 to 25, we finally see one more way in which God's works out his plan, and that is with a change in situation. With a change in situation. I wonder, where were you before you became a Christian? Or before you began coming to church? What kind of person were you? What things did you believe? How did those beliefs manifest in your life, in the situations you found yourselves in? There are amazing testimonies from Christians who at one time felt completely off the tracks. People who found themselves in prison, as addicts, estranged from their families, in their lives. And the beautiful thing about these testimonies is that when we get to see the way in which God works, we see amazing changes taking place. This doesn't mean that suddenly everything becomes easy, that suddenly their lives were completely changed, or that they were released from prison on the day, or their broken families were immediately fixed. But what we see is God's great work in the heart of people. The way he changes parts of a person's life, how he places them on a road to where they should be. And as we look at Moses this evening, we see the way in which God has taken him out of Egypt, how he places him in Midian with this priestly family, and how his situation is changing around him. Moses' situation drastically changes even in these first words of verse 21. Where he had been royalty, he's now fugitive. Where he had been single, he is now married to Zipporah. By taking a wife, by having a son, Moses seems to give up on Egypt. His hopes of being the deliverer of Israel. Moses is content with where God's placed him. Even though Midian was very different, he seems to settle into this life, to start this family. For him and Zipporah to have Gershom. and to acknowledge that he is this foreigner in a foreign land. This name, Gershom, meaning stranger, was evident of some loneliness in the heart of Moses. Living apart from not just those he had been raised with, the Egyptians, but also those he identified with, the Hebrews. Moses knew what it meant to have his whole life turned upside down. But still in these moments, he couldn't see or understand what was still to come. He had left everything behind. He had escaped the problem of murder. He had run and no longer had this physical link with Egypt. He was truly someone out and seemingly alone. He felt it intensely in these moments. But in time, well, he'll be called to take this solitude and instead lean on the Lord and dwell in him. But in this time in Midian, he doesn't simply stop. He doesn't simply just give up. We make a mistake when we think that the years in Midian were waiting time for Moses. They were instead working time. He had never worked this hard in his whole life. God trained him. God shaped him for a future calling. But Moses, at this moment in time, is certainly not on the shelf. Trapp says in Egypt, Moses learned how to be somebody. In Midian, he learned how to be nobody. Much he had learned in Egypt, but much more in Midian. And while Moses' personal situation is changing, while he's now married, while he now has children, other things are changing too. The Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, dies in this time in the desert. The Pharaoh, who in verse 15 was planning to kill him, well, he's no longer there. A new Pharaoh will be in his place. But the Israelites groan in their slavery. They cry out, and the Lord hears these things. Now, while some parts of the situation changed, some, well, didn't. The Israelites were still enslaved. They were still being worked hard. They still called out to God for help. And even in the way the Hebrews are acting, we see God's plan. His people call out for help as God is already preparing the man who will go and work in that situation. God hears these groanings. He remembers the covenant he made. Moses was a different man. He had been being changed by the Lord, a change of scenery, a change of company, a change of situation had been worked here. Now, if Moses had forgotten about Israel in Egypt, in the sense that he had turned his attention away from them, in the sense that he now had this family, he was now living in Midian, God didn't. God remembered. And this word remembered here, it's not that he had forgotten and suddenly he remembered. No, this word means this active sense of turning his attention towards them again, to them and their affliction. God didn't turn his attention to Israel because they were such good people, but because of his agreement with Abraham, because of the covenant. He gives his love and attention to us on the same basis. The covenant relationship we have with God is through Christ, and that is why God loves us. Not because we're good, not because we cry out loud enough, but because of Christ. And God looks at them, and he is concerned for them. God is concerned. He cares about his people, and in time he will change their situation too. He's been planning that. He's been preparing for that. He's been changing Moses for the job, and they simply need to trust. And that is the same for us. God has plans for us, whether we're in hard times or easy times, whether we're suffering or not. We need to trust God's plans. We know what is to come. We know that Christ has promised he will come back again. And so we need to trust in God for that. Moses had been in such a worldly place in the palace. He had been surrounded by all the things that a person could want. And I'm sure that he was allowed to do almost anything. He was a man that wanted very little as the prince of Egypt. But God had a plan for him. And one of the aspects of that plan was that there had to be a change. A change in his situation. He had to leave the palace. He had to escape Egypt. He had to head back to people of the Lord. And in that plan, he was made into a husband. He started a family of his own. God was molding Moses into a man who would lead the people. And as he was being changed and used by the Lord, the people were looking to the Lord more than ever. They cry out for help. And little did they know, help was being created for them. We sometimes need a change in our situation. When we find ourselves being taken out of bad situations, we need to trust that the Lord knows what he's doing. We must look to him. Know that he works in amazing ways. God has plans for all of us. No matter how big or small those plans are. Ultimately, though, the plans he has for us, they require us to put our lives into his hands. They require changes in our scenery, in our company, in our situations. They require that we rely on him rather than the things of the world. So we must take that step of faith. We must hand our lives over to him. Know that he will guide us as he sees fit. We must fix our eyes on the great future that is found in Christ and trust that God has a plan for his people.